Gatecrashers podcast. Even though I didn't talk to them about this at all, I'm doing it anyway because they are that wonderful and I just don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. If you want to learn about your new favorite fandom, scroll through any of their episodes, find something that seems interesting, and figure out why this is going to be your new favorite thing.
I'm Haley from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. Today, I am super excited for this because I thought I'd run through all the Super Nintendo games, and I realized there's some manga stuff that I missed, so I'm thinking, you know, who has a Super Nintendo podcast that I can sucker into coming on the show to talk about a Super Nintendo game? So naturally, I thought of Steampunk Link and MB-Zero from SNESCapades. And luckily, that's right. Where I was able to get on the show.
That's right. We're here.
We are those suckers.
Yep. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know how I got here. they put a black bag over my head. And when they took it off, I was here. So, yeah. Excited to be here, though. And this is really cool. This will be a fun one to talk about.
Well, it's always nice to have new guests on because I get new perspectives on things. And it's nice to have returning guests on because I get to hear them talk about something else different from the first time they came on. So this is the best of everything right now because we get a good licensed property game. We get a returning and a new guest. And we get to teach people about a new franchise because I highly doubt that most people over here, especially when this came out, had heard of Area 88.
Yes, I think that is extremely likely. This was apparently one of the very first manga that was ever brought over, licensed in English, but it doesn't seem like it was like tremendously successful. And it definitely did not, clearly was not enough of like a breakthrough hit that they wanted to name the game the same thing as the manga here in the US. So, yeah.
This is one that just really confuses me with that changing of the title license issue, because Area 88 doesn't really have any baggage with it. It doesn't, nope. Like, there's nothing in that name to me that you couldn't just explain real quick in the game and be fine, and even for people who don't know what the property is.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can really think of personally is that maybe they thought Area 88 sounded more generic as a title for a shoot 'em up game than UN Squadron does, but I don't know. I don't have anything other than that.
Yeah, but I mean, naming it UN Squadron, I feel like muddies the water a bit, because like these people are not with the UN. They're not, you know, this is a mercenary right. Air force in the, you know, in the middle of Africa, or I guess in North Africa somewhere. I don't think they ever specify that. I think they call it like I think it's a fictionalized small country in Africa that is, I believe a member of the royal family, we learn later on in the series, has is running this base of right. mercenary fighters. So yeah, do we want to go into like just kind of the basics of what Area 88 is all about?
I only managed to watch a few episodes of the anime. I know y'all managed to track down and read part of the manga, so mm-hmm. I think you are in a much better position than I am right now to tell everybody what Area 88 is about.
Yeah, so I guess I'll just go through a really quick, just kind of the basics of it. So Area 88 is a mercenary air force where people sign contracts to join. They earn money based on the amount of enemies they take down, and they are not allowed to leave once they sign that contract until their 3 years are up, or unless they buy their way out of the contract, which costs them, I believe, like $1.5 million.
Yeah, it's $1.5 million US dollars is what they say. So
yes, and I believe that even in the Japanese version, the shady merchant who sells them everything deals in US currency. But yeah, basically, not only are they earning money for shooting down enemies and for going on missions, but that the flip side to that is that they also have to pay for a lot of their own stuff. So if they crash a plane, they have to pay for the new one. You know, if they want special weapons or whatever, they got to pay for that. So it's an interesting premise. A lot of the characters that we meet, you know, even most of the main characters are there because they've signed up for one reason or another. But our main protagonist, Shin Kazama, he has been tricked into all of this by his rival. He was actually an airline pilot for a Japanese commercial airline who was duped while on a drunken bender with his friend to sign a contract with this this kind of shady Air Force, and was essentially kidnapped and brought to the Air Force. And somehow, despite not having any fighter pilot experience that I think we're aware of, becomes one of the best pilots that they have.
Yeah, and I've been trying to kind of work that out myself, because like this was written in like the early 80s, and it is set in like the late 70s or early 80s. It's the time frame is a little bit unclear, but I'm guessing that either just like you know, I don't know, maybe airline flights were less automated than they are now, or, you know, there was just like less sort of clear public understanding of how different the experience of flying a like commercial airline is versus a fighter jet. You know, it's essentially supposed to be plausible that, like, you know, Shin was sort of, you know, basically kind of shanghaied into joining the Arslan military and being part of the squad at Area 88, and then just to survive, essentially, he got really good at being a fighter pilot. And maybe that's possible, but yeah, he's a little bit of an odd man out, because a lot of the other people at Area 88 are kind of former soldiers. You know, his best friend Mickey, who's another one of the pilots at Area 88, joined essentially because he was an American, you know, military pilot, and kind of couldn't get used to civilian life after the Vietnam War. And, you know, there's a bunch of different pilots that in the way the manga is broken down is essentially like there is sort of a running storyline. Like there is continuity between the chapters, and there's kind of a running story that's happening in the background of Shin's girlfriend from back in his sort of real life, Ryoko, trying to find him and you know, figure out if he's still alive and bring him home. But there's also all these sort of one-off stories that are a lot of times centered around a new pilot that's introduced in that chapter and dies by the end of that chapter doing something awesome and heroic. And so, you know, all these people are there for various reasons that mostly relate to just how much they love flying or how little they can kind of deal with the world outside of military conflict. So, yeah, there's kind of a bleak tone to this, but it's all very kind of, I don't know, the elevated and in a way kind of like romantic. You know, it's almost kind of like, you know, like the person who is responsible for creating Area 88, the author and artist Kaoru Shintani, I know that he was an apprentice of the great manga artist Leiji Matsumoto, who did like Captain Harlock and like Galaxy Express 3-9. And they're not the same, but you can definitely see kind of a similarity in the idea that like everything is terrible and you're probably going to die, but you're gonna look awesome doing it. And you know, it's gonna be just a legendary death as you go down, basically. So yeah, it's a really cool manga, though. It's a thing that I had not really, outside of the game, had not really had any exposure to. And yeah, the manga is definitely, it's really stylish. It looks really good. There's these great kind of, you know, full page layouts that pop up from time to time. And yeah, it's just a really, really neat, it's a really neat story.
It's definitely one that I want to go back and read. You know, the anime, I get that mixture of episodic stories along with the continuing storyline. You know, there's definitely some characters in there that carry on throughout the anime and some ones that show up for their one episode and be done. You know, you had one character, Boris, the Angel of Death.
Right.
Who just, for whatever reason, could not have a partner come back with him. But he was only there for that one episode, as far as I saw, anyway.
Yeah, and then you get other characters who pop in, like Greg Gates, who it's like, okay, maybe this guy's just going to be another one and done here in this episode. But then I think, oh no, wait, he's the other character who's playable in the video game, so he's probably going to make it. So, yeah, sure enough, he keeps coming back.
Yeah. Another major character, which Steampunk Link already mentioned, is the merchant, McCoy, who's this kind of shady character who pops up at Area 88 and basically sells the pilots all their stuff, including, you know, of course, like their you know, ammunition and weapons and even their planes. But he also sells them, you know, magazines and like, you know, alcohol and stuff. And you get the sense that he's not charging good prices for anything because he's the only supplier of anything that they have. But he is also a pretty significant part of the game because he is the guy who in the game sells you all of the stuff that that you can use to upgrade your plane between missions.
I mean, Shady doesn't even begin to describe him, though. You know, in the episode of the anime with Boris, he wanted to get some information about one of the other pilots. And so he goes up and tells the pilot that if he doesn't get the information, all his cigarettes and alcohol are going to cost double.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he starts out as kind of like a, oh, you rapscallion, you. And then as this series goes on, it kind of fluctuates between that and like, dude, you're a real jerk. You're horrible.
Yeah, there's I don't know if this made it into the anime or not, but there's an early chapter in the manga where he sells Shin this new radar for his plane that is a really good, really like high spec piece of equipment, but it can only run for like 1 minute on its battery. And it's like, he's like, and Shin's like, what am I supposed to do with this? This is useless. And it's like, well, if you pick the right minute, it's going to be perfect. And, you know, of course he does. So, you know, that's the way these stories tend to go for Shin, luckily. McCoy is you know, probably deserves to be brought up on war crimes or some kind of international criminal law because of how he treats the Area 88 pilots. But, you know, you love him. He's the only one who's gonna sell you your champagne for New Year's. So, hey. Right.
So how much exposure to Area 88 have y'all had outside of, you know, preparing for the show and playing the game?
I mean, virtually none, honestly. Yeah. You know, like my main touchstones for Area 88 are, I think, things that it has influenced. Like, I think that you can kind of see it. It's one of those things where I think that having sort of, you know, had some exposure to it now, I can see other things have kind of probably been inspired by it. Like, I think some of the Ace Combat, you know, fighter jet games are probably pretty heavily inspired by Area 88 in some ways, probably particularly the most recent one that came out, which was literally about a bunch of like prisoners having to fly really dangerous missions for this fictional country. So, you know, but yeah, as far as Area 88 itself goes, yeah, like outside of UN Squadron, this is not a thing that I have ever noticed the footprint of at all.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I played some of this with a friend of mine who was really into this kind of game. And he kind of ended up becoming one of those anime people. And I don't know if he knew that this was based on a manga. Like, I don't know if he could have known back then. But so I'm guessing maybe like it was something about the art style that kind of appealed to him. And that's why he was drawn to this game. But no, I don't even think I knew this was actually based on a manga and OVA and all of that until like probably a couple of years ago when I watched Jeremy Parrish's video about UN Squadron. Yeah. And that was probably when I found out, like, oh, hey.
I mean, when I was putting the initial list for this podcast together, I was using the Wikipedia list of games based on comics, and this one is not even on there. I mean, a lot of manga-based games are not on there, so that kind of doesn't surprise me. But like, the only reason I know about this one was either because I started to look through Moby Games' lists because they're a little more comprehensive, or somebody told me that I was missing it. Can't remember which one of those it was.
It's kind of funny because the producer for the game mentioned in an interview at some point that this game was part of a kind of strategy that Capcom, the company who made the game, sort of adopted in the late 80s to try to do more games based on licensed media properties to kind of expand the audience for their games. And it's kind of funny that for this game, at least, definitely in this country, definitely in the US, most people are absolutely unaware that this was based on anything. And if they like this game, they probably like it largely because they like Capcom games and this is a well-made one. So, yeah.
Yeah, this came out really early in the Super Nintendo's lifespan, and it, you know, as we noticed, you know, going through the first year and a half, the library became just really saturated with shooters. And despite that, this is still one of our favorites. I don't think it's quite the highest ranked shooter on our list right now, but it is up there because it's just really solid. This was also adapted from an arcade game. Capcom had released this in arcades first. Did lose the two-player co-op feature, which was a little bit of a bummer, but didn't hurt this game so much as, say, like maybe another game that Capcom did that with, like, I don't know, Final Fight?
Yeah, maybe.
They also managed to keep all the characters in, so you don't have your odd re-release with a different character being super expensive problem.
Yeah, we didn't get UN Squadron Greg.
I mean, really, like, Greg could have been pretty easily lifted out of the game if they needed to do that, because he is a pretty minor role in the grand scheme of things when you really read through some of the comic. But I am glad that they managed to keep all of them there. And they did something kind of neat here. Like, I think in the arcade version, each fighter or each pilot was tied to a specific jet, where here they start out with a jet, but you can later buy whatever jet for whatever pilot you want to. So, you know, you've got a few more options on the Super Nintendo version, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, that is very cool. And also, there's a little bit of kind of a an attempt to give each pilot a bit of a specialty, which actually ultimately means that, for me at least, Greg was the character I liked playing as the most in this game, because he can kind of take like an extra hit. Which, you know, if you're not actually amazing at this kind of game, can be a really meaningful difference between characters, just being able to survive one bit longer than the others. So,
yeah,
but yeah, I think that
I was just gonna say, specifically, he recovers from hits faster. Which, like, the way that the health system works in UN Squadron is really good. I think this was something that elevated it above a lot of shooters for us on the system as well, that it's not just, you know, like one hit and you're gone, or one hit and you lose all your weapons. In this game, you know, you've got a health meter. If you take a hit, you've got sort of like a period of vulnerability where if you get hit again, you will just immediately go down. But if you can avoid being hit during that time, you'll get your health meter back minus, you know, like one unit of health. So it gives you a little bit more of a buffer, you know, for it to get through the levels. And with Greg specifically, he's really great for, especially for beginners, because he can shake off damage faster. He has a much shorter window of vulnerability.
We're going to try to figure out which of these characters is best for people to play with while I drop some promos for a few other shows.
Hey there. Do you like movies, cartoons, video games, anime, and everything in between? Then we have a show for you. The Four Nerds by Nerds podcast. Every week, Josh and Ben bring you all the latest and greatest in movie reviews, news, commentaries, interviews, special guests, and tons of bonus episodes. New episodes come out every Monday. We also make great nerdy content on our YouTube channel. You can find our show anywhere podcasts are found. The Four Nerds by Nerds podcast, your one stop for all your nerdy needs. Stay nerdy, my friends.
Looking for a podcast all about nerddom?
Want a podcast with an emphasis on representation?
The Nerd Alternative is the podcast for you. Join me, Ram.
Me, Hassan.
And me, Levi.
Three black British nerds tackling the pop culture we love and sharing why we love them. The Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy.
Those are some great shows to check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So yeah, it surprises me for some reason that this came out so early in the Super NES's lifespan, because it does not feel like an early Super Nintendo game to me at all.
No, it looks really good. Like, it has these great, you know, big sprites for the bosses. There's lots of good environmental art that, you know, feels really like fully featured. And like, it's kind of funny because when we were going through, because if you don't know our show, we have essentially been playing every game for the Super Nintendo in the chronological order that they were released in the US. So we've seen some, you know, kind of trends. And one of the early trends with Capcom specifically is that actually several of their early games were kind of rough technically for the Super Nintendo. They looked good, but they didn't really, either they were missing something or they had really bad, you know, frame rate problems or something like that. And this one avoids a lot of that and comes out looking really good.
And this is well before they had any special chips or anything to push extra stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, this was purely just, you know, what the base Super Nintendo hardware could do.
It's just crazy to me that they could make this look so good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like we've said before, you do have to make a little bit of sacrifices to pull off getting it from arcades to the home system. But this is one where I feel like those changes don't really take away from the game, because it's just something you had to do to make the game work.
And it's also helpful that they did add things to it. Like, it wasn't purely like, well, we couldn't do these features, so, you know, this is just a lesser game. It's kind of a different game in some ways, because it does add things like having more ships, more planes that you can buy. And, you know, it's, you know, a little bit more kind of reconsidered as like a home game than some of these were.
Yeah, Capcom was usually pretty good about that sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, you know, they did have a lot of, you know, less than stellar releases early on in the Super NES's lifespan. But yeah, they had this, and within a year they had a very good version of Street Fighter 2 on the system. We're still like just really impressed with, like, wow, I know there's two more versions of Street Fighter 2 coming to the Super Nintendo, but wow, they really nailed it with the first one.
But yeah, no, this is just a really solid game all around. And I think that maybe also contributes a bit to people not thinking about this as a licensed game. because usually those kinds of games have a bit of a stigma. It's not always earned, but it is sometimes that, you know, they're kind of either low effort or they were clearly churned out very quickly. But in this case, yeah, like this does not feel like anything other than like a top shelf production by one of the better companies making games for the system.
And I feel like for this one, being a licensed game is just kind of a side fact, because it's not like they had a TV show or a movie to try to get it in with. I know that when this came out, you know, finding manga to read was, I mean, you were months behind when stuff was coming out in Japan anyway. So it's not like you had to time anything with that. It's just kind of could come out on its own timeline. Capcom had time to make it right.
Yeah. And I do wonder, you know, I mean, even though the franchise tied to it really isn't all that important to the kind of game that it is, you know, I mean, you do get all those characters. You get, you know, these really great, you know, I mean, like how many shooters have, you know, a portrait of an actual person on there that you can kind of be like, oh, this is the guy who's flying this plane right now. This is who I'm in control of. You know, not a lot of them really had that, really cared about that sort of thing. I think that the characters and just, you know, kind of, you know, window dressing as it may be, do make for a much richer experience than it might have been if they just said, hey, let's just make a shooter.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I mean, also, one thing that I think is pretty interesting to note about this game, specifically UN Squadron, is that for a lot of shoot 'em up games that came out of Japan, they did some stuff when they brought them over to the West to try to downplay the Japanese-ness of them. You know, if there was manga art, if there was sort of, you know, very, very obviously Japanese looking characters or anything, they would usually like take those out. They would usually, you know, replace them with a lot of times nothing. A lot of these games have like very stripped down presentation in America compared to their Japanese versions, just because they were under the impression that something that looked too much like anime would alienate people here. And they did not do that with this game. This game is really just, aside from the title change, this is the same game that came out in Japan.
Yeah, and in a way, I think that was kind of a risk too, because I mean, like, take a character like Saki, who runs the base. He's got this very prominent scar on his forehead, and you see this character like, well, what's the story there? What's going on with this guy? And it's not really addressed in game, but he is still there, you know, very prominently featured, you know, kind of giving you your mission briefings or whatever. You know, you could kind of see, you know, maybe a company that was a little bit more weary of that, like, oh, I don't know, like, everyone's gonna be like, why does he have this scar? It doesn't make sense. We're not explaining it. Maybe we should take the character out or change him in some way. But here, no, just, there's Saki. There he is. This is what he looks like.
It amazes me when I find these games and they change so little. Like, there's this one, I know there's Dragon Power on regular Nintendo, which I need to go back and look at. You know, if anybody wants to come on for that one, I still need to find a guest. But it just amazes me that they will take the property and strip it off of the title and the box and everything, but then leave so much of that original property in the game. And I know part of that is because changing the box is a whole lot easier than changing the code in the game. But, I mean, especially for something like this, just slap the name on there and let it do its thing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see exactly what the, like we were sort of talking about before, I don't necessarily see what the point was of not calling this Area 88, but I am glad that so little else was changed about this. And yeah, I think that if you are, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, keep going.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think if you are familiar with this property, this game reads kind of differently than it does when you're not, because, you know, there's a real level of sort of, I don't know, darkness to this, like a real level of kind of, you know, grim, you know, we're out here at sort of the edge of society, just trying to survive. That you
death is always looming over us, you know, like yeah, that sort of vibe.
And I think that vibe plays a lot more strongly if you're familiar with the manga and you're kind of reading all or the anime and you're kind of, you know, viewing the game through that lens. Because without it, I think everything looks really cool and you're kind of intrigued by the characters and the presentation. But I don't know that you necessarily get that element of it, but it's definitely there. And I really like that about this.
Yeah, the story in the game is that Shin is engaged to his girlfriend and he is about to graduate from flight school, but he gets tricked into signing up with this military force, so he has to serve his 3 years or buy his way out.
Is that all, like, stated in the instruction manual? Like, do they actually lay all that out there in the manual? Because I haven't seen a manual for this game, so I don't know.
I'm looking at the Capcom wiki, so I'm really hoping that that's in the manual.
Okay, yeah, because I don't actually know how much that story is surfaced to the player. Because from what I remember of it, it's a pretty straightforward, hey, these guys are planning an attack on the base or an assault on the base, but, you know, you can go after them and kind of, you know, cut them off at the pass, nip this in the bud before they get too close. Because that is the sort of the other thing, is that if you fail, it's not necessarily game over. The game kind of keeps going, but the enemies get closer until, like, there's the possibility that they are actually, like, at the base and you have to defend the base or it's just game over.
Well, somebody on the Capcom wiki either looked at the anime or the actual Japanese release of this. Must have had a story in there.
Yeah. Yeah, like, because I said, I haven't seen the instruction manual for this, so I have no idea how much of the manga's story is actually surfaced in the American release of this game.
That would actually be pretty cool if it was. Instruction manuals frequently tend to do a lot of the heavy lifting as far as setting up stories for these for action games back in the day. So I would not be at all surprised if that genuinely is in there. But
until like literally a minute ago, I had not seen the manual either, but I found it real quick.
Okay.
So, a year ago, a ruthless army of mercenaries swept across the kingdom. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but
okay,
they go across the kingdom and they destroy everything, and guided by arms dealers of Project 4, which is the antagonist here, the mercenaries are now controlling every area of the country except for Area 88. So, for some reason, the UN squadron is in Area 88, which I guess kind of explains why you have people from different countries.
Yeah.
And each pilot begins with $3,000, an unlimited number of aircraft, because aircraft are cheap, and you go shoot things.
Huh. Got
it. There you go.
Yeah,
but they don't go into like the backstories of the individual pilots, which, you know, I can understand. Like, you know, it's like, hey, that's not really what this game is for. We're making a shooter, not a, you know, like a
no, visual it's novel. Real. It's real base level for them. It's Shin is born in Tokyo. He is a top gun of the UN squadron. He raises his power level the quickest. So, I mean, this is where they're from. This is how they got experience. This is why you want to pick them if you want to play this kind of character.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, for manual of that era, that vintage.
It also has an ad for Mega Man 3.
Very good.
Which has nothing to do with this at all. I just think it's kind of fun.
That is kind of fun.
Was Mega Man 3 that late in the it couldn't have been, because there were like three more of them on the NES. Going on a tangent now.
I do want to say, I think the idea that these guys are literally employed by the United Nations makes the idea of them having to pay for everything that they use in battle much funnier. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you know, you're backed by this huge international coalition, but, you know, maybe salvage some stuff from the planes you shoot down for scrap, so you can pay this creep to give you 20 missiles. That's good, right? You're fine with that.
There's probably some world leader who just wants to pull all of their backing out of it, because they are much more important than the UN as a whole.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe Konami could have teamed up with them and made this like a stealth Metal Gear game.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, there'd have to be at least like, you know, 10 pages of dialogue about the ethics of you know, private military forces.
Right, yes.
You know, before and after each level to make that work. But I'd be down for it, you know.
Instead of putting it in the game, since they can't do good speech samples, please turn to manual page 17.
Yes, right.
But the gameplay for the game, you know, outside of all the storyline that is or isn't there that you may or may not know about, it's a pretty straightforward game.
It is quite straightforward. Yeah, the it's a horizontal scrolling shooter. You choose your pilot, arm up with whatever weapons and whatever plane you want to buy. You shoot your way through the level, collect power-ups. At the end of the levels, there's generally a boss, and yeah, the stages are, I feel like, kind of short for this kind of game, but there's sort of a lot of them, so the rhythm of playing, it's a little bit different than something like, you know, Gradius or something like that.
Yeah, and I just checked our list, and as of right now, we have 167 games on that list, and UN Squadron is number 11. It is behind only Space Megaforce, so it is the second best shooter on the system thus far, according to us. And also, I guess that would make it the best horizontally scrolling shooter on the system.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Space Megaforce is a vertical
shooter, yeah. Yeah, and I replaying it for this show, you know, it, I think our impressions of it still really hold up. I do think there is some, there, despite what I said before about this game being, you know, technically a lot more kind of accomplished than a lot of early Super Nintendo Capcom games, I do think that there is some kind of noticeable slowdown here in places where there's a lot of, you know, anytime there's a lot of bullets and a lot of enemies on screen, it does kind of chug, but not to an extent that I think it really affects your ability to play the game. And it's kind of infrequent as well. So yeah, in general, yeah, I still think this game, even after having played so many other Super Nintendo games since we ranked this one, you know, I think this is still a really, really good one.
Yep, same.
And for somebody like me who's not, you know, super huge into these kind of games anyway, a little slowdown doesn't really hurt anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true. Sometimes you actually kind of want the slowdown, so yeah.
Yeah, and I would say, like, neither of us are, like, huge shooter fans. I mean, I'm definitely not.
No.
So typically when we've ranked a shooter pretty high, it means it's not just because it's a really good one of those, but also because the barrier to entry is a little bit lower than maybe some other shooters are that might frustrate newcomers to that particular genre.
Yeah, definitely.
And this one does get a little boost in replayability because you can try to play through the game with the different characters or with a different plane or picking up different power-ups because, you know, just like some of the pilots have their characteristics, some of the different planes have different characteristics. You can make sure that you have the wrong weapon to go through a level, make it harder for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing can make it fun for people who are into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
So if you're one of those weird Dark Souls players or something.
Oh, yeah, I definitely can't do that one.
No, neither can I.
So overall, compared to Area 88, the manga and the anime, what do you think this game really gets right?
Well, like I said before, I do think the tone is right in this. I do feel like there is a sense conveyed by kind of the art design and specifically, you know, in the ways in which you can fail and try again, that, you know, there is that sense of the same sort of, you know, heroic desperation that is in the manga. I think that is very much on display here. And yeah, you know, that's a big part of it. And that's a big part of this this property, I think. So it's really cool to see that represented here, even though the game is, frankly, is overall like a pretty simple and straightforward shoot 'em up game.
Yeah, I think the visual style is really great. I think all the characters look wonderful. They look just like you'd imagine that they look from, you know, seeing them in the black and white mangas. I think they really nailed the look of this one.
And I think it's weird to compare the character looks to the 2004 anime. Obviously, that is a little bit newer than the game.
Yeah.
But they look like the characters in the anime there.
Yeah, and I mean, reading the manga, definitely it is from a very different time, you know, where sort of the, you know, the common tropes of character design were different. And also, you know, it does kind of look, you know, like it's in keeping with specifically the Leiji Matsumoto stuff that you know, Shintani, the you know, artist sort of cut his teeth on. So, you know, I'm not that surprised that it had that when they did another series of this in the, you know, the early 2000s, they kind of changed the character look to be a little bit more like what was sort of common in anime at the time. But yeah, this game absolutely still looks quite a bit like the manga, and you know, it's nice to see. It's a fun style that I think comes through really well in the character portraits here.
And what do you think this game really gets wrong?
So I wouldn't
the
say
title.
It gets this. Yeah, well, yes, the title for sure. Yeah. The title and frankly that backstory that they sort of tacked on for the American version, you know, doesn't really fit with the game. You know, these part of what makes this whole thing work is the idea that these guys are kind of trapped in this situation a little bit, whether they got into it on purpose or not. And the idea that they're kind of, you know, an outside military force that's coming in to help out, that doesn't really work. But the other thing for me, at least, that I don't know that it gets this wrong, but that I think is kind of inevitable that it doesn't make an appearance here, is any of the sense of like what the life these guys live is like outside of the times when they're in their planes flying. And like I said, that's not really something that, you know, this is getting wrong. It's just like, how would they have represented this at this time? So, you know, I mean, I guess that there could have been, they could have done some kind of like, you know, sort of, there's another game from this time period that I think about a lot whenever I think about this kind of thing called Wing Commander, that, you know, was like a space shooter game, but it sort of split your time between being out flying around and also this kind of like adventure game mode where you're just on like the base ship between missions, talking to people and just kind of hanging out. And like something like that probably could have gotten across some of the other sort of non-combat dimensions of Area 88, the manga. But once again, that's sort of beyond the brief for what this game is. So,
yeah, I mean, as cool as it would have been to get to sort of inhabit the world, you know, living on that base and interacting with some of the characters, I think if they went too far in the weeds with that, we just wouldn't have ever had the game come stateside
right.
at all, because like
right.
nobody really wanted an Area 88 game back then because nobody knew what that was. I mean, you know, to the point where they felt like they should change the title. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that all of that sadly gets left by the wayside is probably the reason we got this game in the first place.
Yes, I think so.
You know, I think the only way they could have really pulled that off would have just been to have some between level cutscenes.
Right, yeah.
The first thing I think of when I think about what this game gets wrong is my high school science classes, because every single science teacher I had would make us show our work, and like if we screwed up the math or something and remember the wrong value of force of gravity, but we did everything right. We just got the math wrong somehow. We would still get credit. And this to me just feels like right there at the base, they got something at the foundation wrong, but then they did everything pretty much right after that. So your end product is kind of off, but your methods for how you got to the end product are pretty much on point.
Do you just mean in the sense that like they made it this, or try to make it this game about the UN instead of this mercenary group, or what do you mean by that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like you miss the reason why they're there, but you get the fact that they have to buy their own supplies and they have to make all the money to get out and everything, or stay for however long they manage to stay alive. Mm-hmm. Just kind of miss the reason why they're in that situation in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's very true. That's very true.
So if you knew somebody who was trying to get into Area 88, would you hand them this game as a bit of a primer course?
That's a tougher question, I feel like, for this game, because, you know, again, like the game and the manga can feel like such separate experiences that like you can, they can be enjoyed on their own, that the other doesn't even necessarily need to be aware that the other exists for anyone to get enjoyment out of it. Like, you know, if anybody who really enjoyed UN Squadron back in the day, like, was it actually important that they knew that it was based on a manga? Probably not. But I do think that, you know, playing the game and reading the manga, like, the two can complement each other really, really well.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think it would really kind of depend on the person. Like, I don't know that giving somebody this game would necessarily get them into Area 88. It would probably more just give them a cool game to play, you know, and it might just kind of stop there. But I think that if somebody was already familiar with one or the other, I would absolutely tell them to check out either the game or the original property, because I think that, you know, the two of them can kind of increase your enjoyment of the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. I feel like this one is, it's the cherry on top of enjoying Area 88 for somebody who just doesn't like cherries by themselves.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Steampunk Link and ME-Zero, it has been great having you on here, and I'm very excited. There were some Super Nintendo games left where I could manage to do that. But if people want to hear more from you, where else can they find y'all around the internet?
You can find our show, Stescapades, on pretty much all the podcast apps. You can find me on Twitter at Snescapades, or on Instagram at Snescapades. We usually have a website. I think it's still up right now, but I need to do some stuff with it and update it a little bit. So I'm not going to worry about plugging that right now. But yeah.
And you can find me on the show. You can find me on Snescapades. I don't really have a presence on the internet other than that. But, you know, it's been really fun getting to come on here and talk about this game and talk about Area 88 with you. So thank you so much for having us on.
Oh, yeah, anytime you want to come on, have at it. Just let me know.
Right, we will do that. And I do want to plug one other thing really quick while we perhaps have the ear of fans of independent comics. Friend of the show, Greg Smith, is writing a comic right now. He's worked on a number of projects, but right now he's working with some folks on a comic called Starlight. Their second Kickstarter was successful a little while back. I am waiting on my copies of Starlight issues 1 and 2, but it's a Starlight, light spelled L-I-T-E. You can find that, I believe, their Twitter is just at Starlight Comic. If you look for them on Twitter, you can find all the stuff about that. But I'm really excited about it. It looks cool. Can't wait to actually get to read it.
And just like always, we'll have links to all that down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
True. Thank you.
And if you want to hear more from me, the best place is to head on over to Twitter, where you can find me at Play Comics Cast. Or you can also sign up for the newsletter, which just got started. I'm not sure when this is coming out, so I'm going to say in the past few weeks, over at playcomics.com/newsletter, which again, you know, link down in the show notes. Check out the Play Comics site to see what kind of things you can expect to find in the newsletter. But if you're a fan of the show, spoiler alert, you're probably going to be a fan of what you can find in the newsletter. If you want to help support the show, one of the best ways to do that is just to tell other people about it, force them to listen to it, steal their phone, and subscribe to the podcast for them, which might mean you have to download a podcatcher for them. But, you know, do that too, because they should probably have that done already. And just make them listen, you know, or you can support it on Patreon. That's cool too. But really, I'd rather have a bunch of people listening to it than money, although having money means I can pay people who help me write reviews. So let's do both. Yeah, go with both. Support on Patreon, playcomics.com/Patreon, but also force people to listen, because yes, that's just a wonderful idea. Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to some other wonderfully geeky shows. So if you got some geeky persuasions and you're listening, go check out GunnaGeek.com, where you can hear all kinds of other geeky shows. And if you like the music that I'm rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to SoundCloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. All right, so if you are recording your end to try to sync up, go ahead and do that. I have two different versions going on my end anyway, so I can line them up with that.
Okay.
I don't know if you wanted to do like a clap or anything like that to try and
sync
up. No. Okay. All right.
That's too much work.
Okay.